behind does not belong to you. Farewell. Letter 70. On the proper time to slip the cable. After a long space of time, I have seen your beloved Pompeii. I was thus brought again face to face with the days of my youth, and it seemed to me that I could still do, nay, had only done a short time ago, all the things which I did there when a young man. We have sailed past life, Lucilius, as if we were on a voyage, and just as when at sea, to quote from our poet Virgil, lands and towns are left astern. Even so, on this journey where time flies with the greatest speed, we put below the horizon first our boyhood, and then our youth, and then the space which lies between young manhood and middle age and borders on both. Next, the best years of old age itself. Last of all, we begin to sight the general born of the race of man. Fools that we are, we believe this born to be a dangerous reef, but it is the harbor where we must some day put in, which we may never refuse to enter. And if a man has reached this harbor in his early years, he has no more right to complain than a sailor who has made a quick voyage. For some sailors, as you know, are tricked and held back by sluggish winds, and grow weary and sick of the slow-moving calm, while others are carried quickly home by steady gales. You may consider that the same thing happens to us. Life has carried some men with the greatest rapidity to the harbor they were bound to reach, even if they tarried on the way, while others it has fretted and harassed. To such a life, as you are aware, one should not always cling, for mere living is not a good, but living well. Accordingly, the wise man will live as long as he ought, not as long as he can. He will mark in what place, with whom, and how he is to conduct his existence, and what he is about to do. He always reflects concerning the quality, and not the quantity, of his life. As soon as there are many events in his life that give him trouble and disturb his peace of mind, he sets himself free. And this privilege is his, not only when the crisis is upon him, but as soon as fortune seems to be playing him false. Then he looks about carefully and sees whether he ought or ought not to end his life on that account. He holds that it makes no difference to him whether his taking off be natural or self-inflicted, whether it comes later or earlier. He does not regard it with fear, as if it were a great loss, for no man can lose very much when but a driblet remains. It is not a question of dying earlier or later, but of dying well or ill. And dying well means escape from the danger of living ill. That is why I regard the words of the well-known Rhodian as most unmanly. This person was thrown into a cage by his tyrant and fed there like some wild animal. And when a certain man advised him to end his life by fasting, he replied, "A man may hope for anything while he has life." This may be true, but life is not to be purchased at any price. No matter how great or how well assured certain rewards may be, I shall not strive to attain them at the price of a shameful confession of weakness. Shall I reflect that fortune has all power over one who lives, rather than reflect that she has no power over one who knows how to die? There are times, nevertheless, when a man, even though certain death impends, and he knows that torture is in store for him, will refrain from lending a hand to his own punishment. To himself, however, he would lend a hand. It is folly to die through fear of dying. The executioner is upon you. Wait for him. Why anticipate him? Why assume the management of a cruel task that belongs to another? Do you grudge your executioner his privilege, or do you merely relieve him of his task? Socrates might have ended his life by fasting. He might have died by starvation rather than by poison. But instead of this, he spent 30 days in prison awaiting death, not with the idea everything may happen, or so long an interval has room for many a hope, but in order that he might show himself submissive to the laws and make the last moments of Socrates an edification to his friends. What would have been more foolish than to scorn death and yet fear poison? Scribonia, a woman of the stern old type, was an aunt of Drusus Libo. This young man was as stupid as he was well-born, with higher ambitions than anyone could have been expected to entertain in that epoch, or a man like himself in any epoch at all. When Libo had been carried away ill from the Senate House in his litter, though certainly with a very scanty train of followers, for all his kinsfolk undutifully deserted him when he was no longer a criminal but a corpse, he began to consider whether he should commit suicide or await death. Scribonia said to him, "What pleasure do you find in doing another man's work?" But he did not follow her advice. He laid violent hands upon himself. And he was right after all, for when a man is doomed to die in 2 or 3 days at his enemy's pleasure, he is really doing another man's work if he continues to live. No general statement can be made, therefore, with regard to the question whether, when a power beyond our control threatens us with death, we should anticipate death or await it. For there are many arguments to pull us in either direction. If one death is accompanied by torture, and the other is simple and easy, why not snatch the latter? Just as I shall select my ship when I am about to go on a voyage, or my house when I propose to take a residence, so I shall choose my death when I am about to depart from life. Moreover, just as a long-drawn-out life does not necessarily mean a better one, so a long